This message is supported by Boehringer Ingelheim, the maker of NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. Next-level dog owners will do anything for their pets, especially when it comes to their well-being. And that means giving them next-level protection from parasites with NexGard Plus Chews. NexGard Plus Chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're designed to be easy to give in a tasty, beef flavored soft chew. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventative. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus Chews.
Hello again, everybody. Initial Reaction is at you once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm from Lake Country and Now Publications, and I am joined via satellite phone or cellular telephone or something this week by J.P. Kadoran of Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. J.P., what are you doing that you're on the phone? What's going on?
We linked up satellite coordinates, and they are communicating with each other, also known as we're just on the phone. So, yeah, nice try via satellite, but... I'm heading to the Great White North up to St. Norbert College. I don't know if you know this. They have a pretty good hockey team.
I have heard about this. Yes, that's just outside of Green Bay for those who do not know.
Oh, yeah. Up in De Pere way. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there up in the De Pere.
I will be interviewing their head coach to run at intermission of our live college hockey broadcast next Thursday.
When did you guys get in the college hockey business? That's new, isn't it?
Next Thursday will be when we officially get into it. It's our first hockey broadcast of any kind. So I'm
really
excited. Yes.
Well, that's fantastic. Are you going to be on the call?
I am. I am the color commentator using my vast wealth of hockey knowledge. And Mr. Patrick Reed, who works for Marquette University in their athletic communications department, he does play-by-play for MSOE radio and webcast, so he will be doing the play-by-play for us of the MSOE St. Norbert game, and I'll be color, and it's next Thursday night live on Time Warner Cable Channel.
That's incredible that you're doing color. I know you're a big hockey guy, so it makes a lot of sense, but man, I haven't heard you actually – have you called games before, like in the booth?
Yeah. I've done some – I've done two or three soccer games, did a volleyball match – and a basketball game. I did a basketball game when Riley the Chance was a freshman. I forgot who they played, but I know that I covered him. It was fun.
Riley the Chance currently starting for Vanderbilt after a great career at Brookfield Central.
So I'm going to go ahead and say that was 4 years ago.
Yes.
Journalism math.
Yes. Yeah. That's not nobody in our business is strong at the math department. I called volleyball when I was in college. I was the play-by-play guy, which was a lot of fun and very challenging. But I would have to think hockey is way more difficult to call play-by-play wise, because at least in volleyball, you know their faces because there's only six of them on the court for one thing. It's easy to know who's going to hit the ball, who's going to dig the ball, who's going to set.
And
with hockey, it's just freestyle.
Yeah, volleyball, you're a lot closer. They're not wearing helmets. You get a break every 10 seconds.
Hockey moves so fast.
It's almost like baseball, and in no way is it like baseball, but it's almost like baseball because it's just kind of a constant dialogue back and forth. You know, it's just kind of play-by-play color, play-by-play color, just kind of going off each other, whereas other sports are more distinct plays that happen. This is just kind of more of a constant dialogue.
Yeah. Well, we've got lots.
At least I think so, and that's what I'm planning on.
Yeah, because you have not done this before.
Maybe it's not, and it's going to be a terrible disaster. Tune in and watch.
There is no finer plug for your own content when you talk about how much of a disaster it could be. But I would say this. I think it's going to be less a dialogue and more just play-by-play. Oh, JP, anything? Nope, play-by-play.
And we've lost JP to the concession stand. All right.
I bet they have good concession stands at hockey games.
We'll see. You heading to Seattle this weekend, huh?
I most certainly am not, because I cover prep sports, JP. Why would I go to Seattle?
I don't know. They have some good football teams out there.
They might. Yeah, I would know nothing about it.
Why not?
That is the WIAA out there, the Washington Intergalactic Athletic Association.
I made that mistake going onto their website quite a few times.
As have I. So the only reason I know that is because I've made that mistake trying to navigate to find it. So in terms of prep sports, there are some things going on right now. There's the basketball, of course, taking center stage, and we're getting now into the final third of some of these seasons in wrestling and hockey, and so that's all going to ramp up here in the next couple of weeks. But obviously the big thing that everyone around here is talking about is the Green Bay Packers football team headed to the national.
Go Pack, go.
Yeah. Up there in DePere. They're very excited up there in DePere.
How do you feel about the game?
I feel terrible about the game, but the good news, though, JP, is that I felt terrible about the Cowboy game and, in fact, went a clean 0-4 in my NFL picks last week.
I mean, that's impressive. That is something that
it
you
is.
Need to broadcast as much as you can, because not everybody can do that. You have to just luck into one at some point, but you did not, and that is something to be proud of.
I've told that to people. If you go 1-3, that's just kind of clumsy, below average. You go 0-4, though, that's special.
I mean, you're a special person. I think I've been telling you that for a while.
Yeah, I looked at the landscape. I thought there's no way the Colts are good enough to beat the Broncos. I really was worried that the Packers, with Aaron Rodgers being injured, and he was, would struggle and possibly lose that game. I thought the Ravens were physical enough to hang with the Patriots, and they were for the most part. And I thought Carolina had the tools to hang with Seattle, and they did for, 2.5 quarters. So I was almost right
on that's,
virtually everything.
That's crazy. You were literally wrong about everything. I know that's kind of what we're saying, but it really didn't sink in until you just went over all of your failed prophecies. I mean, you were wrong about everything. That's kind of awesome.
And I think when I picked Carolina over Seattle, it was sort of to demonstrate in a way that anything happens in the NFL playoffs, there's really no way to predict. You can break it down all you want, but there's no way to predict. And that's why when we go into this next game, you have to give the Packers a chance. They're good enough to win. They're an elite football team. They are a truly elite football team. And, Seattle's the favorite. And, they're the defending champions in their house, and they should win. But
your Carolina pick was more of a maybe than a definite. It was like, this is a plan that could happen.
Yeah, I felt like Carolina could pull it off. And I was saying it loudly and proudly because I thought, it'd be nice if they actually did pull it off and I could say I told you so, having tried to analyze it.
But instead, 0-4.
0-4. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. I said at the beginning of the weekend, like, with my luck, the Colts will be the only upset team that wins after I picked 3 or 4, and sure enough. But I don't think anybody is going to pick Green Bay with confidence this weekend other than to say what I just said. Anything goes in the NFL, and that's still how I feel about it. Obviously, with Aaron Rodgers being hobbled, it does not bode well. There aren't too many things you point to say Green Bay is going to have the advantage here, here, and here. You just have to go with the fact that they're a good football team, and they can beat a good football team even at their place.
Yeah, I think I started probably around 10% chance of winning, so basically picking the Seahawks by 15, 20 points even. But now I've moved to maybe 30 to 35%, just because the more you break down Seattle, the more you realize that you can break them down into just not an ordinary team, but just a very good team and not this super juggernaut defending champion untouchable. A lot's been made about their winning streak and the role that they've been on, how they're playing so good right now, averaging only 3 second-half points allowed in this stretch. But then the more you look at it, the more you look at who they played and you look at the quarterback play, even Arizona, who is – pretty much a good team for most of the year. They played Seattle with Lindley as their quarterback. I think that was the first week of it, if I'm not mistaken. But you just look and Seattle maybe isn't as impressive. You look at like their top receiver is Doug Baldwin, and then you realize, okay, well, are we actually scared of Doug Baldwin? No. So then it's kind of, then maybe do you just take your chances and kind of stuff the box and load up on the run, whether it's Marshawn Lynch or Russell Wilson. Do you kind of say, all right, if you're going to beat us with Doug Baldwin and others, go ahead. So that makes me feel a little better. And then you just kind of I looked back at everything that went wrong week one, which was a lot, but like just things that you forget about. Like I've completely forgot that Derek Sherrod played his best turnstile impersonation, just let everybody through, unless somebody gets hurt again, that's not going to happen. So I don't know. I feel a little better about it. I still pick the Seahawks to win, but I think that there's more of a chance.
Now, are you going to be going to Seattle this weekend? I know that was up in the air as of last time we talked.
Yes, I am not going to Seattle. In one of the more bizarre – well, first of all, don't be disappointed. But
yeah, your jinxy camera has not done a lot of favors.
Keep in mind the road record here. But no, it's this. I think I thought of it this morning in anticipation of the podcast. I have basically two family weekends all year that I take. One is the 4th of July, and the other is this weekend. Both of them are spent up at the cabin, and this is the first year we've ever covered road games, too, so it's never been a problem. So I kind of requested off of work this weekend, not knowing that it was the NFC Championship, and I offered to work other weekends, and they said, that's fine. So I will not bring my terrible, terrible karma to Seattle with me.
Jumping back to the Dallas game, the big story, of course, is the catch. That was not a catch, and I think the general consensus is that from the NFL perspective, definitely not a catch. I don't know if they'll change the rule or even investigate the rule. You would think they would. Is that how you looked at it as well? That just the letter of the law said yes, not a catch, but common sense says it should have been the Cowboys' catch, and maybe their win in the end.
Yeah, it was a great call on a terrible rule. I think that's as simple as you can make it. The refs made the right call according to their rule book. And their rule book is horrible, awful, and makes no sense at all. So by that sense, it's fine. If that was Jordy Nelson, I mean, the entire state would be just furious right now. I mean, can you imagine if that would have happened to the Packers? I haven't listened to Dallas Radio. I haven't read their columns to see what the reaction is.
Oh, it's what you think it is.
Okay, good. Well, and it should be. I mean, the NFL is wrong about so many things, and they're trying to they're just trying to overcomplicate so many things when in reality that was an unbelievable catch that Bryant made. I mean, we should be celebrating plays like that. Instead, right, they're finding little minuscule ways to take catches like that away, and I just think it's wrong. I'm glad that it happened. I'm certainly glad that it happened. And even if you would have caught it, obviously the thinking is, well, now Aaron Rodgers has 4.5 minutes to go down and get a field goal, maybe even a touchdown to win. And I still would have felt comfortable with that because he was 9 for 9 heading into that final drive. So I still feel good about the Packers' chances of winning because they were playing so much better. But, you got to get that catch. It was so unbelievably athletic and awesome that to not reward it and put it on highlight reels, it just feels wrong.
Yeah, I would I was kind of stunned after the game. Obviously happy because I'm a Packer fan, but just the same way a little bit that I felt after the Fail Mary game. Like, I really just can't believe it worked out that way. And you pointed out what a lot of people do, that, I mean, they were practically in field goal range by the time they moved the ball down, you know, to the end where they wore out the clock. I mean, they would have had a chance to tie or take the lead in that game, but it was just kind of a, I don't know, you sort of feel not dirty, but just, I don't really know if I should be super happy because I'm not sure that they deserve to win the way they did. But that's the way it goes in professional sports.
You know what the feeling is like for me, and I'm sorry, for whatever listeners we already lost with the first 10 minutes of rambling of this podcast,
yes,
I'm going to lose for us here.
Okay.
It feels a lot like after last night's Iowa-Minnesota game. Iowa took the lead thanks to, what is it, Jared Uthoff, Utiff, how do you say his name?
I don't know.
Well, it's Jared Uthoff is how you pronounce it. I know you're familiar. Anyway, so he scored with 3.5 seconds left. The problem was the clock stopped. Well, he scored with 6.1 seconds. The problem is the clock stopped for 2.5 seconds. So then they had to take the clock down to 3.5. Minnesota had the ball with 3.5 seconds left. They actually drove the length of the court, and they scored to tie the game. But there was he missed it by 0.1 seconds. He still had the ball in his hands with 0 seconds. So the point is, I felt kind of dirty winning that game because they picked some arbitrary number to start the clock at, and by 0.1 second, they missed. So I kind of feel the same type of dirty, like, well, that was a catch that Bryant made, but it wasn't. Minnesota scored, but they didn't. My team won. So, yeah, that's how I feel.
Yeah, my eyes glazed over when you were talking about the Iowa Hawkeyes just now. So,
you should have been there, man. You should have been there.
Of course, Jared Uthoff, the former Wisconsin Badger, who was initially not allowed to transfer within the Big Ten, has since done so and become a very good player at Iowa. Very concerning a week from now when the Badgers take on the Hawkeyes. Wouldn't you be worried?
Exactly. And so now we can transition into that. And now Minnesota is 0-5 in the Big Ten, there are five teams, I believe, tied for first in the Big Ten. Iowa is 3-1, Wisconsin, Michigan, Michigan State, and Maryland. Or no, Indiana and Maryland. So there's a bunch of teams up at the top. Am I worried? So if I'm a Badgers fan, am I worried about Iowa coming into the Kohl Center on Tuesday? No.
Yes.
Because I'm – no. Because I'm an Iowa fan, and I know that that's just not going to happen. So, I mean, so where did the Badgers stand right now is like kind of a better, more podcasty question. Kaminsky is back, which is nice because anytime you can add an All-American, it helps your team. That's my official analysis of the Badgers. Having Jackson out, Jackson out for 6 weeks. I don't know. I mean, it's not good. But I don't know how bad it is. It means that Bronson Koenig is now the starter, and he's shown flashes a lot. I mean, so much so that you can't really call them flashes anymore, that I think he's kind of ready. I think the problem comes in that as much as I love Shoey, Zach Showalter, you know, as your backup point guard right now in his career, is probably not the best option for you.
So I think obviously the big thing out of the Rutgers game is losing Trayvon Jackson, and you're talking about that a little bit. That's a big deal, and yeah, maybe it's going to be difficult to figure out who fills in for him, but it's weird in college basketball. You still look at the tournament as the end-all, be-all, and if he's going to be back for the tournament, outside of being rusty, it's hard to really get too fired up over losing a player who's important but not one of your maybe big two or three. And also, I think a lot of people are concerned that the loss will make it difficult for the Badgers to get a one seed when the tournament rolls around, which is totally fair, but I look at like Duke losing to Miami last night at home. I mean, that's just as damaging a loss, although obviously Rutgers isn't as good as Miami, but it's just as damaging a loss to their resume. And I just feel like Kentucky's struggling a little bit. There's just no infallible team ever in the landscape of college basketball, and so I still think the Badgers could come away with a one seed. This is going to be a distant memory if they win the majority of the remaining games in the Big Ten.
They lost 5 out of 6 last year. I mean,
I know, and they were still a two seed.
Yeah, so this, I mean, that loss means nothing as far as seeding. I mean, especially if they go out, they win the Big Ten tournament, you know, they go 14-4 in conference play or even 15-3, something like that. No, their seeding is very, very safe. The question for me is how well will they be playing at the end of the year. So once Jackson comes back at, what will that be, probably the earliest week of March, I would think, so just before the tournament, you know, how are they playing at that point? Will Jackson coming back hurt or help them? I mean, there's a chance that Bronson Koenig can play better than Trayvon Jackson, and that's not far-fetched at all. I think that can happen way easier than Packers winning in Seattle. especially
yeah, right.
If you look at, you know, Trayvon's clutch gene that has showed up maybe 3 times in his career, and so now he's labeled as clutch. As you can tell, I'm not a tremendous fan of his.
I still like him as a senior, a guy who's really experienced, and in a way, it's too bad. Sometimes these injuries happen, and they have happened in the past to, like, Josh Gosser, and that was what allowed Trayvon Jackson to become the player he is now because he got extra playing time at an early stage of his career. Well, the Badgers don't need that because their depth is good already. They don't need some bench players to step in and become great players down the stretch because they've got enough great players for a tournament run. So there isn't a real benefit here other than, I mean, I don't think there is. There's no benefit to having him on the bench. So it's gonna be tough.
Here's the problem I have with that, saying that their bench is so good and their depth is so good. It's just something that, you know, we've been hearing for basically about a year that the Badgers' bench and depth is phenomenal with Koenig and Dukan, and before there was Nigel Hayes on the bench and there were a lot of these players. And that's fine. But then when Jackson and Kaminsky go out and you lose to Rutgers, well, then you can't say that your bench is that good if you go and lose to Rutgers. You know what I mean? So that's the only problem that I have with this. And
yeah,
that's not
I understand
you.
That.
Yeah, that's not you I'm yelling at. It's others. So.
I know you don't yell at me.
Yeah.
At least
so there you go.
Not without being a nice yelling. I don't really know what the term is, but
with a nice smile on my face.
Yes. I would say that if in that game Sam Dekker plays better. I mean, he really struggled and Gosser wasn't sharp, and so I do think that you did need to see more out of some of your core players in the absence of Kaminsky and Jackson. But very frustrating loss, no doubt, and one that you know, every coach likes to talk about things that you learn from your losses, so maybe they learn some things and Kaminsky comes back, They beat Nebraska and carry on a rampage through the Big Ten, right past Iowa, among others.
Yeah. All right, shall we get to some prep football here?
Sure. Yeah, speaking of Wisconsin, the Badger football team, obviously we've talked about their, I wouldn't call it turmoil, but a lot of action in the offseason here. Gary Anderson announcing he was leaving, and Paul Chryst, now the new head football coach at Wisconsin. A lot of guys are left in limbo when stuff like this happens. Assistant coaches, current players, they don't really know what their future holds. The same holds true for guys who've committed to Wisconsin. We have a lot of guys in our area, notably the guy we're going to talk to here in a second, David Pfaff of Homestead, defensive lineman, who is named the state defensive player of the year by the Wisconsin football coaches. He, like a lot of guys, had a lot of questions when he found out the coach was leaving. So I sat down with him, chatted with him. Great, great interview. Phenomenal football player, won the state title.
Good interview. I don't know about great.
Oh, I didn't mean great. I meant he was a great interview subject. You're saying, when you say good, not great, you're talking about my interviewing skills, am I right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I'm not as polished as one J.P. Cadoran. With a fancy camera and a winning smile.
It takes years. It takes years to do, so
I understand. Take many years because you're like 24 or something. But
shut up.
the conversation, we talk about Gary Anderson, we talk about Homestead, we talk a lot. So give it a listen, David Pfaff of Homestead.
Okay, so just in general terms, when you heard the news that Gary Anderson was leaving the University of Wisconsin football program, just off the top, what was your reaction?
Yeah, when I heard, I was in immediate shock. I was pretty stunned that he would leave such a great program like Wisconsin and for Oregon State, you know. I know he wanted to get back to the West Coast, but I was a little disappointed, you know, that he left. And I was kind of unsure where my recruitment was with them after he left. So, you know, I was shocked and kind of worried.
Yeah, I imagine. And did you have conversations with other – I have to think other recruits are kind of going through the same thing, that they're wondering, are they still going to be invited to the University of Wisconsin? I would assume that everything is still binding and you're still going to get to go, but what – I mean, did you have conversations with other recruits that maybe were in the same position as you?
Well, the night that he left Wisconsin, or he announced his, he was going to leave – I was actually scheduled to have a meeting with Coach Strickland, one of their assistant coaches, which was very helpful at the time because I had so many questions. And there were a lot of commits talking to me and reaching out because we are one of the strongest classes in, you know, the United States, I believe. You know, we know each other. We're all good friends. And everyone had questions. And the big question was just why? You know, why would you leave such a great program? To go somewhere else when we honestly thought that he was, you know, try to build something amazing here, you know, like, Barry Alvarez and even Brett Bielema, you know, so we just wanted to talk and we ended up doing that. So.
Yeah. You mentioned Coach Strickland because once a head coach leaves, it seems like all the assistant coach positions are kind of up for grabs. How big of a concern is that for you? Cause I imagine Strickland and all those guys are as much a part of your recruitment as Gary Anderson was.
Yeah. You know, they're a big part. You know, it's not just the head coach, but it's who you're working with every day. You know, it's the strength and conditioning guys that are with the head coach. It's the, you know, the assistant coach, the D line coach. It's, you know, all those people make up, what you're going to be a part of. And, you know, I was really worried, but, you know, when I talked to Strickland, you know, who is a coach who's been there forever, he played there. He's got strong ties with Coach Alvarez, and, you know, I knew he was going to stick around. I was pretty solid, you know, with my commitment after knowing that.
Did you get contacted or were any recruits, I'm sure some were contacted by other programs once Gary Anderson announced he was leaving?
Yeah, there was a lot. I was contacted by a few schools. Austin Cafentis was, Kyle Pennison definitely was, you know, some of the guys who were from out of state, and especially the guys who were coming in for, early enrollment, they definitely were, just because they were pretty much the ones who were going to be, you know, affected by this, you know, the earliest. So guys like that, you know, and just, it was all kind of just a big, you know, question game at that time. You know, we didn't know. So, you know, all of us are still committed. You know, we're happy to be going to Wisconsin. And, you know, those other schools, you know, we we all were very polite and respectful, but you know, we just we're staying with Wisconsin, you know.
Yeah, I imagine that's kind of an off-putting thing, especially because you're in a place where you figure the recruitment process is long gone, man. You're done with it, and all of a sudden you got schools calling you again. How tough is it not to at least listen to what they have to say? Or, I mean, I'm sure you are listening to what they have to say. How tempting is that?
It's very tempting. It's, you know, they're pitching ideas of their program being stronger and more loyal and, you know, just and very solid, you know. And I'm in a program right now where there were a lot of questions and a lot of, you know, unanswered questions. So, you know, it was tempting to flirt around with a couple other schools during my recruitment, but when Coach Anderson left, I think my recruitment, you know, my commitment to Wisconsin solidified. You know, I said to myself, kind of, you know, I'm not committing to Gary Anderson. I'm committing to the University of Wisconsin, you know, and that's what I realized in that, you know, 48 hours or whenever it was where, you know, I really thought about it.
How much inside information maybe did you have about the Paul Chryst thing? It seemed like a pretty poorly kept secret that he was going to be the next coach at UW, and it certainly makes sense for UW to get that information out there. Did anybody indicate to you that was pretty much a done deal, other than just what you were hearing in the media?
From Ben Strickland and Coach Alvarez, all the commits kind of had a good idea of who we were looking at. But no one really knew for sure. We definitely knew before everyone else did. But, you know, for a while there it was pretty, we were blacked out. You know, we didn't know who was going, going to be the head coach. So, but yeah, we get the insider stuff, some of it at least.
So. Sure. So you mentioned, you know, Austin Kafensis, Kyle Penniston. A lot of the top recruits aren't necessarily guys that you're going to see in the state of Wisconsin. How did you kind of cultivate? Surely you've seen them at camps and whatnot, but how do you sort of have cultivated that friendship already before you guys are teammates?
Honestly, I have no clue. A lot of the guys are just, we're all nice people, you know. We're all athletes. We all want the same thing. You know, we want to win a bowl game. We want to win championships like that, you know, and we know what it, you know, it takes to do it. You know, all of us are coming around from, you know, different parts of the country. We have East Coast, West Coast, America, Samoa. I don't know how we did it, but, you know, the equation was perfect. You know, the balance is just perfect. So, you know, we're all friends and we're all athletes and we just really want to succeed. And I think that's the common denominator here is, you know, success, you know, and trying to get along with each other. Even though, you know, we there's some egos on the team and that's fine. You know, you need that, you know, competition, you know? So I think it's just those kind of things, you know, just having a good personality.
How much for you does being a kid from the state of so growing up, I imagine you were somebody who looked at the University of Wisconsin, would have loved to play for them someday. How much you talked about committing to the university and not the coach. Do you feel like for kids in Wisconsin that it really does transcend the coaching staff, that being a Badger is something that a lot of the kids that you know who are headed there from this state, really, this is just a lifelong dream, and no matter who the coach would have been, they would have wanted to play for the Badgers?
I think so. I think the University of Wisconsin is way more appealing than, you know, a faceless coach. You know, it could be anybody. You know, it obviously helps that it's a great coach, but, you know, the University of Wisconsin has so much to offer, and that's why I fell in love with it. You know, I always tell the story, you know, in 2007 when Homestead went to the state championship, you know, I walked into Camp Randall and I loved it. I loved it, and it was the coolest experience of my life, and I was 10 years old, and that's the kind of things that, you know, just brings people, you know, to the university is the, you know, the atmosphere and the people. And so I think it's definitely the university over the coach.
So jumping then to Homestead, which has won a state title since 2007, which you were a part of as a sophomore, I kind of was curious just comparing that experience to – being able to maybe beat Arrowhead back-to-back years, your junior and senior year? Because I know, I mean, that junior year win was such a huge accomplishment for Homestead, and then to get him again senior year, I know it's not playoffs and it's not that end of the year stuff, but I mean, as you look back on your career, which of these things is really looking like, do you really look at as the highlight? Is it winning that title in you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, or being able to shut down a powerhouse team back-to-back years?
Honestly, I really do think it's the title. I have met some amazing people just by being on the Homestead team, but the people that I really cherish and will be my friends forever are my senior class, first of all, and second of all, the guys who were on that 2012 state championship team. They were phenomenal people and just athletes. They were crazy athletes. They knew what it took, and they did it. You know, they put their foot down and said, no, we're not going to be scored on, you know, and they did some amazing things on the defensive line, on the defense, and even on the offense. You know, we had some really good all-state players that year, so.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
One of the great upsets I think a lot of people view in state title history, just seeing Wanakee go down at all. But I know that was a crazy game, that 14-0 game.
14-0, yep.
Yep, 2012. So to take them to look back at this season, I kind of did have a heartbreaking end for Homestead in the level 4 loss to Menasha, who went on to win the state title. You've had some time to digest that. I mean, you guys defensively had such a tremendous game, and then they managed to score basically really in the last possible opportunity and win 8-7. As you look back, I mean, how do you sort of look at it? You got to look at it like you guys played really well, even though it didn't wind up in your favor.
Yeah. I the second the buzzer went off and I knew we lost, you know, I thought to myself, we went out swinging. I mean, you can't say that our defense and, you know, even our offense, you know, we went out swinging, and that's how I would want to go out, you know, and that's how we did go out. Obviously, it would have been way better if we were in a state championship game, which I think we should have been. But, you know, hats off to Menasha. You know, that was their first year going to the state championship, I believe. And, you know, they just bested us in the last 3 minutes. And, you know, I think looking over, you know, our entire season, to be disappointed of 3 minutes of it, you know, I think that's, you know, somewhat acceptable. Still at Homestead, you know, we strive to be excellent. You know, Coach Rauch and Coach Keel always you know, definitely push that. Even our assistant coaches, but you know, you gotta look at the positives, and that's what we did after the game. You know, we were as a defense, you know, because you know, I'm on the defensive side. We were proud, you know, that we came together that whole season, and we just did what we had to do to get that far.
And then for you personally, obviously coming away with Defensive Player of the Year in the state of Wisconsin is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people knew who you were last year too, but I imagine this year there's more focus paid to you on defense. Is that frustrating a little bit that you're not going to be able to rack up the numbers as a senior because so much emphasis is on stopping you versus maybe what you maybe had a little more freedom as a junior and sophomore?
It's a double-edged sword. You know, you love it, but you hate it. You love it because it's, you know, somewhat flattering, you know, to know that you're that good, that you need, you know, 2-3 guys on you at all times. But then, yeah, like you said, it's very frustrating, you know, when people are diving at your legs, you know, chop blocking you and stuff like that. It gets frustrating, but this year I never let it get in my head. You know, I played, I did what I had to do. And I balled out, you know, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go on that top this year. And, you know, I had a goal coming into the year, being the defensive player of the year of the state of Wisconsin, and I got that done. So I was very, very happy with that.
How'd you get the news that award was coming your way? Was that just clicking refresh on the browser? Did somebody break the news to you?
Actually, my special education teacher, Molly Navarre, told me. I was taking a test, and she announced that she told me because she knew I was waiting that, you know, that whole morning. One of my friends told me that it was going to come out, and he told me 3 hours before, and I was just waiting, you know. So it's cool. Pretty crazy.
And then kind of for maybe the last question here, just playing for Dave Keel, what has that meant for you as an individual, as a football player? And I mean, what's that like? Not too many people get to play for a coach as celebrated as he's been.
Honestly, it's been probably the best thing that's ever happened to me. One of the best things that has ever happened to me. He's a phenomenal coach. Everything he brings to the table of the football field, it's phenomenal. You know, he does something that not many other coaches can do. And he, you know, he has cultivated a culture here at Homestead that has just been, you know, just amazing. You know, we dominate on the field, and he makes us, you know, be the best people outside of the field, you know, off the field. And so I think it's those kind of things that's really cool. But then just winning, you know, I feel bad for other people just because, you know, it's not in a cocky sense, just in a way of, I haven't seen many losses, and that is directly correlating with, you know, how hard we practice, how hard we do things at Homestead. And you know, it definitely shows. So it's just been an experience of a lifetime, and I will never regret it for one second, no matter how hard it's been in practice, or, you know, coach has been getting on my back, anything. It has been amazing.
All right, David, thanks very much for joining us. Good luck at Wisconsin. You're about to gain a whole new group of fans here as you don the Badger colors.
Thank you very much.
All right, so there you go. You grilled him. You were digging into. So what'd you do next? How'd you feel, huh? What's going on? It was good. I'm giving you crap once again. Yes. But that was cool. It was cool to hear some answers from somebody. I mean, those are a lot of questions that a lot of fans and a lot of media had questions about. You know, like, when did you guys know that it was going to be Paul Chris? So it was cool.
Yeah, and I'm always interested when something like this happens. Do these kids get poached a little bit by opposing coaches who, like he said, they're selling the idea that, hey, our program has it all together. Yours, you have all these questions. So it's got to be frustrating for kids who want to get the recruiting process behind them and think it's all signed, sealed, and delivered, and then all of a sudden things kind of get thrown back up in the air a little bit. So hopefully we will see David Pfaff in a Badger uniform next year and tearing it up maybe as early as next year. Who knows? There have been some pretty good freshman contributors in the last few years.
There we go. All right. Well, I think next time we talk, I will be making my preparations for a trip to Phoenix and the Super Bowl, and life will be good, right?
So you will be going to the Super Bowl, huh?
We will. We have already made flights are already refundable. Flights are already booked, and when it comes to this, you need to make your plans early. And I would be spending, I think, 8 nights down there. So
woo, we can do the podcast from Arizona. Get me down there, and we'll do it live from Arizona.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on that, and we'll just stick for a normal podcast with Super Bowl preps, hopefully.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
That's fair. We'll talk all about it. I look forward to it. Hopefully you have a nice, a good hockey experience with the St. Norbert's College team.
I hope so. So this week on Weekly, by the way, Waukesha West girls team, still number one in the state. I have that going on Sports Weekly, the Appleton hockey team, which I care about. I don't know if you care about, JR, but I care about that.
I always care about what you care about.
And then a story on Cody Wickman, the Pulaski graduate who now plays for the Milwaukee Panthers and has tripled his minutes in his sophomore year, and talking about the struggles of the season because they're 5-12 right now. And, yeah, so that's what I got in Sports Weekly this week. What you got, huh?
Yeah, I think Wickman won a state title with Pulaski, if I'm not mistaken.
He did.
I'm not sure.
You're
did
not?
He beat Matt Thomas and Onalaska, or was that a different year?
No, they beat Wisconsin Lutheran.
That's right. I recall now, yes.
That was 2 years ago. He was a Division II All-State player.
Very good, yes. Well, we've got lots of coverage of some of the top teams in the state, fortunately, in our part of the coverage zone. Kettle Moraine hockey team, speaking of hockey, they're up to number 5 in the state. Kettle Moraine, Maguanago, Oconomowoc, they've won 9 straight games and beaten a couple state-ranked teams along the way, so they are looking very, very good. You can check out stories from Chuck Delsman this week in the Lake Country Publications papers. And don't forget to check out Roundball Rankings at mycommunitynow.com/roundball. All kinds of good stuff there. Got a player of the week, got standings, stats, everything. It's a great place for preps basketball coverage.
Man, Chuck Delsman, there is a guest that we need to have. The stories that man can tell about Lake Country area sports, my goodness.
Yeah, the guy's a legend. And the great thing is that the vast majority, at least 60% of the stories he tells are true.
That's better than the crap that I put out there. So
yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
Cool.
You have pictures, so you have documentable proof that your stories are true. Chuck, yeah, he just kind of embellishes a little bit.
All right, man.
All right,
we will talk to you fans later. JR, farewell from my satellite coordinates unknown, parts unknown throughout the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, super unknown based on how you've gone in and out of this phone conversation.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying, okay?
I know.
Give me that.
I do give you that. All right, thanks again for listening, everybody, on Initial Reaction. We'll see you soon.
Bye, friends.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.